Cracking, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Checkpoint AFK. I am your host, Norris Howard, sitting here at the crib alongside with all of the wonderful people of Checkpoint. This week, we got Callie Sloan, we got Robbie Landis, and finally returning to the show, we got Weird Beer. Everybody say what's up.
What up, what up?
What up?
If you're watching us on chat, twitch.tv/checkpointxp, if you are subscribed, you make sure you hit us with the what up does in the chat. They're there for your use. Say what up though to everybody. And also, don't forget, you can check all the episodes of Checkpoint AFK, of all of our other shows, over on the YouTube. You can see all of our shows there as well. Checkpoint XP on campus, Owl's Nest. All of our stuff.
And if you're watching live, you can drop those sweet, sweet subs like Vibin' with Violet just did with the Twitch Prime sub coming in.
Ooh.
Very nice.
We appreciate that. Thank you so much. And I'm loving seeing the chat light up. That's my favorite thing in the world. But as we always do, we start to show off with some reviews. So, Callie.
Yes.
Do we have reviews?
Yeah, do we have at least one?
We do not.
Oh no!
These people suck.
Not a single.
They suck.
Well, you know what? That's not technically fair. There is one. It is a 5-star review. It just doesn't have a message attached to it.
Oh.
Okay. So here's what that tells me. The show is so good.
There's no words.
There's no words. There's nothing I can say that can improve the show.
Does it at least have like a title to it?
Nope. It's blank. I don't know if they just did something wrong. I didn't know you could leave it blank.
Someone literally just came and was just like, yeah, 5 stars. All right.
Like, in my head, it's not actually that it's blank. It's just that it's like a soundtrack underneath it. It's like the angelic choir playing underneath the 5 stars.
like when Doug sees Patty Mayonnaise. Like.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. That's what our show is. Our show is like Doug seeing Patty Mayonnaise. That's going to be the new description when we try to pitch it to people.
See, I like Violet's explanation. Whoever that was, they're just speechless.
Correct. There's nothing more to say. It's perfect.
Mate. Yeah, but if you guys would like to, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. We read reviews on the show all the time, good or bad. It does not matter. We will read it. So, some of our best, our favorite reviews are the bad ones.
Amen.
I believe we've been called social justice warriors.
Oh yeah.
I believe we've been called
talentless
hacks. I believe we've been called cishet cucks.
I was about to ask, if you haven't gotten a cuck, are you even trying at this point?
Are you even for real?
Exactly. The police. Hold on.
Libtard cuck. Absolutely, we've gotten that one.
Legit. Hold on. Sure. One second. Legit, hold on. For real, I think the police is not in my door. Hold on.
Oh, all right. Oh, God. I don't want to witness a murder on my show.
All right, quick. No, in chat, drop what Norris is being arrested for.
Norris is getting swatted right now.
Whatever he's being arrested for, put it in chat. Whoever is the correct winner, $100 to you right now.
I have an idea, though, since we don't have a review this week. Rick, obviously you still watch the shows because I think you put them together to go on YouTube. Yeah. So why don't – and it's been a minute since you've been on. So why don't you give us a review of how the last few shows have gone, in your opinion?
Because I rewatched AFK last night even.
See, there you go.
It's fresh in my mind.
Okay, I'm not swatted.
Okay, we were worried for you.
Yeah, no, it was something that came that is incredibly important that needed to get delivered to me in my hand.
I see.
In packaging that came from Mexico?
Or it just got served or something.
No, I didn't get served, and no, I'm not dealing drugs, Rick.
All right, those are the first two things we go to. You know why.
So I'm giving so as a review for what I've seen of AFK lately. It's a lot of fun watching Callie kind of have to push back a lot on Norris, it seems like. It was interesting, though, to see everybody get along on Final Fantasy VII. I thought that was going to be the one thing that
No one was more surprised than us that we got to play a game and all love it.
Let me tell you something. We were going to get along on that. I knew Robbie was going to have things to say, period.
Of course.
Because Robbie... loves that game so much. I mean, we listen, to quote James Baldwin, he loves Final Fantasy so much that he reserves to write the right to criticize it furiously. And so I get it, right? Callie and I, that's not our favorite Final Fantasy. If it was good, we were going to give it credit. Robbie, that could have been the Citizen Kane of video games. Robbie would have been like, but the fucking sled. Who cares?
Fair enough. So, Norris, I do need to point out, your voice is sounding much more silky smooth this episode than last.
Well, that is thanks to the HyperX shoutcaster.
Cut the check, HyperX.
But it's a great mic. I love it.
Do you feel like you upgraded in life? Does like your life feel better now that you have that mic back?
Well, yeah, because I could do this.
Oh.
Wait, what?
Okay, so for the people who
I thought it
wasn't going to
turn back on.
so you can turn your mic off.
So for the people who aren't watching, there's this beautiful red brilliance that shines from the microphone, and if I tap it, it cuts off, and it also mutes the microphone. So it's almost like
50% of the mic is just the light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I do have a concern about that. If you're trying to turn off the mic by tapping it, you're going to get a loud tap sound on the recording.
Not all the time.
Oh, okay. You can do it really gently, too. The first time you did, you just like smacked it. I'm like, that's not any help at all.
I was being a jackass.
That's even worse.
Yeah, I was just being weird. But it's good. It's good to have Weird Beard back on the show because he usually has really bad takes.
Oh, for sure.
So we usually need somebody on the show. Like, usually everybody else is pretty logical. We need somebody who just doesn't know what they're talking about sometimes.
Well, I can throw a bad take out there with the best of them, I feel like. Pretty good at it. Usually it's food related, though.
It's food. Listen, yeah, usually it's food.
I just want to be the wild card. I'm the Charlie Day of the group, all right? So,
well,
like,
you know what? We also need somebody who knows what the hell they're talking about on CSGO, and I don't know shit about CSGO, so, you know, we need that.
Did you watch any of the streams? So, on Thursday of this week, I streamed with Callie playing CSGO instead of Valorant. Did you happen to catch any of that?
I did.
It was so bad.
It was bad. We went 2-1-1, right?
Yeah, we went 2-1-1.
Yeah.
But it was still bad.
I'll say this. Callie, you are significantly better at CSGO than you are at Valorant.
I certainly had way better games on CSGO than I do on Valorant. Like, I went almost even KDA almost every game, and I had one that I was well above even, so I'll take that.
Yeah, but, I definitely get that. but... with that said, we are going to take a slight break and kind of return to CSGO a little bit for another conversation about not just CSGO, but also Overwatch and any game that has ranked in it, because we are going to talk about MMR and how can you really rank something? How can you rank individuals, really, in a team-based game? How should you do it? So we're going to have that conversation when we come back for more Checkpoint AFK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
And you can pretty much just go again because we don't have a commercial to play this time.
Cool.
You're good.
What's up and welcome back to Checkpoint AFK. Your host Norris Howard here. If you guys haven't checked out the Checkpoint XP website, make sure you go over there. We put all sorts of news, posts, really funny articles and editorials, and also it's home base for all of the content. You can see all of our episodes or get the drop down to see all of our episodes, as well as participate in some really cool contests where we give away all sorts of stuff all the time. And our shop is over there if you want some really cool Checkpoint XP merch as well.
Man,
so
I need
forget.
More Checkpoint XP merch in my life.
Dude, my favorite coffee mug is my Checkpoint XP coffee mug.
Yeah,
flat out. But make sure you head on over to our website, checkpointxp.com, where you could get all of the new hotness. Now, Valorant just put its ranked mode live.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, even talking about ranked in a game that's not even out yet is
odd. It's weird.
It's very odd. But ranked is live in closed beta. People have been clamoring for it. They are ready to show off their EPs and all of their, you know, big brain plays
right.
because they made it to platinum. But I think it raised the question because Riot put out a statement essentially saying that individual skill and all that type of stuff would go into how far you rank.
Yes.
It would be taken more heavily into consideration based on your rank. It won't be just wins and losses, even though that is still the highest point. That is still the most weighed point is wins and losses. But your individual play will go into it as well. With this said, we all participate in ranked in various games. Callie, you and I play League.
Yep.
Robbie, you and I play Overwatch. Callie, you and Weirdbeer play CSGO. We've all played Valorant at some point or another. Is this the right way, you think, for online games to begin ranking? Should individual skill play more of a part in this?
I mean, I think it's one of the... The situation is, it's easy to say yes because, like, when you say it, it sounds great. Yeah, of course, I want more than just whether I won or I lost to play a hand in whether or not I'm good. Because if I get hard carried by four people, maybe I'm not good enough to actually be going to a higher rank. And if I'm playing really well and my team is awful, then I don't want to be punished for that. So when you say it in the abstract, yeah, absolutely, it's a good thing. But I think it's really disingenuous to just say yes without acknowledging how freaking difficult a task like this is, because
yes.
It is incredibly difficult to do well.
So I think, has anybody really torn into the way that they score like kills and ranking stuff on Valorant yet?
Not in Valorant, not me personally. I know how it goes in League, and I know how it works in Overwatch.
So, like, one of the ways that I like what Valorant is doing is they place emphasis upon, like, when your kill happens and how many you get. So, if you get five kills, if you get an ace in a round, like, that's worth way more than getting five kills over five rounds. Right. And they also do
that
it.
Makes sense.
They also do it depending on how many of your teammates are still alive. So, you know, like they weight those things differently, which I think is like where you start to scratch kind of how deep do you want to take the wormhole on this?
Well, but because I think you make a good point, though, because if you take five kills in a round and get the ace, you carried that round and won a round for your team versus five over five rounds. You got the bare minimum. You're expected to kill one person yeah. before you die. That's the goal.
So it's odd. I just don't know how they're going to be able to balance from a 5,000 foot perspective and on the ground perspective, because yes, wins at the end of the day really kind of matter the most once you settle out into like your strata of what your skill level is. But at the same time, like just because I have 20 kills in a game, but they all came at the end of the game when we were already up, you know, 11-2, it's not the same, you know, as early on, like when the game is still competitive, like when people just give up at the end of a game, right?
You're just farming up.
Who cares, you know, like all of a sudden you'll have a high KDA. Like you have to be able to balance that with like, okay, at the beginning when they were still competitive and we were only winning rounds with one person alive, two people left alive, like that's the part.
See, in a perfect world, I think we all agree that, first of all, if you're winning or losing, that should determine if you're gaining or if you're losing SR. I don't care how good you are. If the team loses, if your team loses, you probably shouldn't get any, like, rating added onto you. But how much you gain and how much you lose should definitely be dependent on it, right? If I lose a game and I have the highest stats, I shouldn't be losing as much as the guy who, you know, went AFK for half of it and didn't get a single kill, right? And from game to game, it's probably a lot easier to determine something like that. Rick, I hadn't even thought about the idea that, you know, early on in the game when everyone's really trying their hardest, that technically that maybe in theory should be weighted better than at the end of the game. Because you're right, if you're stomping out another team, by the end, there's a lot of them that are probably just feeding to get
just
it over.
AFK,
with.
Yeah, they don't care. At
when
that
you're
point.
Up 10-1, what does it matter who you're killing at that point? The other team is their economy is crippled, and you're super ahead, and they don't care.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I see what you guys are saying, but at the same time, I also feel like, especially in a game like Overwatch, where team cohesion,
Overwatch is
team,
even more difficult. Yeah,
and team communication is, I mean, paramount. If your team is not communicating or at least on the same page somewhat, you will not win that game. You will not win a game. You won't win anything. But at the same time, there's ways that you're measuring somebody's effort at the very least. You're measuring somebody who is trying still, even though your team is losing by quite a bit. I feel I feel like that individual, even in a loss, right, is somebody that probably shouldn't be punished because they're trying to carry a team. If I'm a player who in a team with communication is a platinum or diamond level player, but because I have to solo queue because I have no friends, or because I can't schedule with my friends because I'm solo queuing, that I am stuck in silver gold because nobody wants to communicate, or because I keep getting stuck with people who don't necessarily know the game as well, but I am still putting up the numbers that I need to put up in line with my role. So I'm not a mercy running around with gold kills. No, I have gold healing. I have gold objective time. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, but we're constantly losing.
But you can't take it into Valorant.
I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm saying in general.
Okay. Even talking about Overwatch, though, I think I tend to agree with Robbie that, I mean, at the end of the day, they rate win-loss as the highest stat. So let's say you lose the game, you go down 10 SR, just as an example. But, to Norris's point, if you make gold in the stats that you're supposed to make, you're playing in line with what your role is, you play pretty well, but your team happened to lose, maybe you only lose 2 SR instead of 10.
This is the issue with Overwatch, though, is the way that they do stats within the game, whether or not it tallies it differently behind the scenes is different. But gold, silver, and bronze isn't determined based on, like, a global average. It's determined based on that game, right?
That game.
If everyone on your team gets one kill and you get two, hey, well, I got 2 gold kills. I guess that means I carry my team. I shouldn't be punished as much as you guys are?
No, global average.
But here's the issue, in my opinion, with all SR, all MMR, is that I don't know if all of it is ranked on a global average, which is why I think rolling out ranked for Valorant is a little bit weird right now, because the game hasn't been out long enough, nor has the sample size been big enough to create a global baseline.
Well, the sample size hasn't been big enough? The amount of people that are playing this game and the sample size isn't big enough?
No, I don't think most people are watching. Yeah. Most people still aren't playing.
Those people are not playing. They're watching.
So you'd rather what? Have the first season of actual like retail release be the?
No, I would rather. I would rather have this game out for 2 months after release and then roll out ranked officially.
But let's also be very clear that with Valorant, the purpose of competitive coming out isn't actually to rank people. The purpose of Valorant coming out with ranked right now is to get people who know what they're doing out of games with people who don't know what they're doing. Like, it's to get some semblance of like, because right now I can go, I'm in a weird spot, right? I can go into a game of Valorant, and because I know the fundamentals of CSGO, I am automatically better than the lowest tier of players in Valorant. But as soon as I meet someone who's mechanically good at the game, I get my head kicked in.
Destroy.
That's it for
something,
me.
Something else, too, that I think Riot might be keeping in mind is I think that they're trying to learn from any mistakes that Apex development had. And one of the biggest things that Apex got roasted for was that their competitive or like their ranked system did not come out fast enough. So even if you believe that, you know, coming out, trying to come out with the ranked mode in beta is too soon, I think you'd rather be too soon than too late with it.
Now, let me talk about Apex's ranking system a little bit, because I think I'm the only person here who likes playing Apex.
Yes. You are.
I kind of like they're ranked, and here's why: is because it's an entry fee to every match you play.
That's cool, but you know, want to know why I have nothing to say about their ranking system? Because it took them so long to get it out, I stopped playing before it came out, and now I don't care.
That's fine, but I'm just saying, from somebody who does play it still, like, it's literally an entry fee because it's a battle royale. You want to drop a whole bunch of times in a row and just try to drop as fast as possible and farm kills and you just get your head kicked in? Sure, do it, but you're going to drop in rank because, like, to go up, the ranking is literally just a threshold. If you have more than this amount of RP ranking points, you're in the next tier. That's what it is. But if you use that entry fee too many times, you fall below that threshold, you drop. That's it. That's just
right,
the way it works.
But what I'm saying, is that threshold is not based on anything but an arbitrary point system. It's not based on anything that has anything to do with what makes a good player. If I'm in a team with two other people who are really, really good pro level, if I queue with those two people every single time,
You'll go all the way to the top.
I'm getting those ranking points.
Yeah.
Period. So it doesn't matter how good individually that I am. So that's the point that I think it makes it flimsy and why every ranking system needs to be based on some sort of baseline. Because if I don't know what actually makes a good player, then it becomes significantly harder to determine how far somebody actually should be.
Should MMR systems be front forward?
The thing is that many of these games already have these tools built in. If you go into the league client and you've played enough games in draft mode, even in non-draft, even in blind, you can go in and compare yourself based on what position you're playing with every other tier in that queue. So if you're queuing up draft pick, you can see, all right, I play a lot of Caitlyn. Here's how all the Caitlyns in bronze, silver, gold, whatever rank are playing. Here's what they focus on. Here's what they're good at. Here's what they're not paying attention to. So you know what it is that you're supposed to actually be doing to be good, because it's all based off of baseline, but that only comes from data. That only comes from
people playing your game. I'd like to hear you and Callie's opinion on how you feel the MMR rating, like when you lose, when you win, how much it gives or takes away from you. Do you feel like League is better than other games you've been in? Because the other thing, too, is, remember, we once talked to Dr. Amin Issa on the national show about Mobalytics, which is a third party that actually helps Riot and League with all of their analytics and stuff like that. So it's definitely something that I think that League has a leg up on compared to other developers that probably do it more internally.
Like Valve.
Do you feel like out of all the MMR systems that you've experienced, do you think that League is probably one of the most fair and balanced?
Honestly, the most fair and balanced ranking systems are in fighting games, to be honest. But again, that is because the only thing you're ranking is wins and losses. And
yeah, so your individual performance is wins and losses.
Right. Wins and losses. But to your point, I think League has it down pat because League has been out for a decade and they've had 10 years to figure it out.
All right, so what's CSGO's excuse then?
CSGO is the worst. It's because here's the thing, like, there's roles that don't get like stats for. If I'm playing like a support, I'm throwing the utility, I'm throwing smoke grenades, I'm calling out, okay, let's push now, let's don't not push. That's gonna be totally lost. You know what I mean?
Like, right. It's something you can't measure. It's like a good flanker in Overwatch isn't necessarily getting kills and damage.
But see, but that's bullshit, though. And that's what I'm saying, is that for all the unique stats that we get in a game like Overwatch that is baked into that software because they pull it out for Overwatch League every game. So the stat calculation is there. It's bullshit that's not used for regular ladders. That's bullshit because you know what makes a good off tank. And yes, appeal might not necessarily be calculated, but you can tell if somebody is getting solo kills as an off tank on another off tank or on a healer.
The point we're
you
making,
know what that is.
So the point
you,
I think
that's there.
Rick is getting at is in CSGO, if you have a support character, sure, you can measure that they're throwing their ordnance, but you can't measure whether their smoke is successfully blocking off vision. You can't,
or the timing, or like
it's not like your AWPer where you can measure your AWPer on straight KDA and damage dealt. That's basically all that matters for that character. But if you're playing a support role, it is extremely hard to measure whether you're doing a good job.
or somebody like there's the lurk, right? Like just the idiot that usually goes to the other side of the map and plays, you know, from behind. You know, like they may pick up a whole bunch of kills, but they're just picking up the last, you know, whatever trash is left over.
Fair. I mean, I understand that point, because if you use a traditional sports analogy, you know, it's you can't measure how well a tight end blocks.
Right.
Exactly. But everybody knows if your tight end blocks well, everybody else in your offense plays better.
Pro Football Focus would like to tell you you absolutely can measure that, but I think they're lying.
Well, and I mean, but that's what I mean, is that if esports is going to be quote unquote just sports, they have to start thinking about stuff like that. Because Robbie, you're right. If you're playing as a Hanzo, there has to be a measurement for how many people get revealed by your Sonic Arrow. Like, that has to be a stat, period.
That's fair.
They have to be able to calculate that. But I think, again, that's getting a little too far into the abstract, and more so my point of, if you're going to factor in, if you're going to make a ladder system, you have to factor in individual performance no matter what, and it has to be made off some sort of standard. Because if not, then you're just throwing numbers at people, and everybody is going to be disappointed with their results.
Yeah,
everybody.
See, one of the things in Overwatch when doing ranked that always just confused the hell out of me was people being like, you know, you shouldn't switch a whole lot when you're doing rank, because then you have lower stats on all of your characters, and that's going to put you at a lower rank. And the idea that you somehow, in Overwatch, the only game that encourages you to swap heroes, that you're actually discouraged to swap heroes, is just absolutely mind-blowing.
I mean, go ahead, Callie.
I was just going to say, I think about League of Legends and how, like, they do an okay job. Back to Robbie's original question, how does League do? I think they do an okay job, but I think the task that they have set before them with the game that they've created is nigh impossible. When you think of the support role and how you can effectively measure the performance of a support player, it's like in an age where you have characters like Senna and Pyke, all of a sudden that, like, I think support used to be a very easy role to measure. You could measure it based on how
much
well your AD carry did.
How many assists do you have?
How many wards do you have down? How many assists? How much healing? How much shielding did you do? You could measure it pretty simply. In the modern era of support, how you measure a good support player is, not to mention, it changes based on what's in the meta. Once assassins fall out of the meta, anyone who played Pyke is screwed. Like, I don't know. I don't, like, League does an okay job. And I don't think that it's because they don't want to do a better job. I think they might literally be up against the limit of what you can measure well.
Well, but at the same time, I still think for League, I understand that undertaking, and so I don't expect as much from that game. You know, in terms of ranking, in terms of ladders, I don't expect as much, because there's way too many variables in a MOBA anyway.
Yeah.
Because then how do you want to talk about how good is somebody? Are they itemizing well? Are they using the top this and this and that?
Think about this, Norris. We've all seen top laners go absolutely ham in top lane, but they don't build in a way that helps the team fight any, and you just lose at mid game because they can't do anything at that point. Did they actually help at all, even though their stat line is going to look pretty good in a loss? No, they didn't. I think League, honestly, is one of the only games you probably could relatively safely just measure it in wins and losses purely. Like,
because there's
many weird scenarios in League.
Maybe, but I think when it comes to Valorant and when it comes to building anything, they have to take individual skill into account, because in that game, more so than many other games, one person is going to affect the outcome of any given round or any given match.
I mean, let's be honest. They're just doing a better ranking system than CS:GO. Like, that's literally the bar that they have to hit. I'm not joking. Like,
but that's
no. I agree with you. And even having not played a lot of CS:GO and a lot of Valorant, even when you compare it up next to Overwatch, I get that individual performance should be better, because unlike in Overwatch, where kills don't necessarily matter, you could be getting gold kills and gold damage out of both teams and still technically end up losing. If
by
you get a kill,
not just losing by a lot.
If you get a kill in Valorant, it doesn't matter where that kill is,
it's
you
important.
Helped your team.
Yep.
It helped. Yes, it's important.
Yeah, I just think, you know, they going out there, it gives me more hope for accurately putting people where they need to be. And compared to Overwatch, which is a game I love, but I also think has one of the worst ranking systems probably like ever made. It is woefully, woefully just inaccurate. Yeah, it's inaccurate. It's just not good.
The last question I have here is, do you believe the MMR system should be transparent, meaning like I should know exactly where I rank compared, how much I need to do to be able to go to the next rank?
Absolutely.
Or like CSGO is completely, it's blind. You don't know. You could play a game and win. You could go up on a
Is there any downside to letting people know exactly how it is? Because, I mean, even if people decide, well, I'm just going to min-max to try and game the system, I mean...
Okay.
First of all, that should be okay, because if it's accurate, then people know what to get better at. And if somehow you think that it's not, like they end up gaming the system, and even though they're not that good, they're getting better MMR rating, well, now you know how to change it, right?
Well, yeah. But I mean, it's like in CSGO, right? I could foresee, and not that I disagree with you, but I could foresee like what's always been said is the more bomb plants or diffuses that you get, right, the higher elo that you'll end up with at the end of the match. That may encourage people to just take the bomb and always just try to plant. You know what I mean? Like if they know that it's not how many times you're killed, it's just try to get as many bomb plants as possible. Like I don't know.
But if that leads to more losing regardless.
But if wins and losses are still ranked at the top and you're running trying to plant the bomb and not actually trying to fight or do anything strategic, then you will lose.
Other stuff will suffer. Yeah.
I think that you should be able to see it. I just don't know if that will be healthy for communities long term. You know, I don't know.
The more transparency is always good, in my opinion, no matter what. Tell people what exactly they need to do to rank up. And that's part of the frustrating part about many games is that I don't know what actually makes me good. I can tell you in Overwatch, yeah, I'm a pretty good Pharah. I'm a pretty good Moira. I can't really tell you what makes me good at those besides the fact that when I play those characters, I guess I win more.
I feel good.
I get medals and they make me feel good.
Yeah, I get medals and medals.
Little dopamine rushes.
I get medals and medals make me hard. Like whatever. That doesn't mean anything. I need to know what actually makes me good so I can get better. But with that said, obviously we ain't got the answers. We'll never have the answers. And this is going to be something that is going to remain in the abstract until the end of time. Nobody will know why they're good at video games or why they continue to suck at them. But we are going to return with the closing segment of this episode of Checkpoint AFK. We're going to talk about AMC making a very strange decision to not share or not have any Universal movies in their theaters for the foreseeable future. Are they playing hardball?
No.
Are they playing hardball, or is this finally the death knell for traditional theaters? We'll talk about it coming up on Checkpoint AFK.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Speaking of exciting, too, another big announcement that just came out, the Dallas Fuel and the Houston Outlaws, we alluded to this last segment, the Lone Star Showdown. This is the first annual presentation of this, the two teams coming together to bring the Overwatch world and the esports world 3 solid weeks of competitive gameplay against these two rivals. And what's really interesting and unique about this is that following this up after each week on Saturday, there'll be a 3-part docuseries that kind of follows the behind the scenes of what's going on with these rivalries, you know, what the players are experiencing, you know, what they're feeling, how they're dealing with that, to give you that sort of human element. Something that personally I think that all of esports is missing and definitely needs to do more of. But Jake, you also actually get to narrate this this docuseries.
Yeah, I think it'll be really fun because, you know, I know like a lot of the players personally, and I've always liked this sort of content, you know, like getting to know people on a personal level, showing that to the fans and just deepening the connection between the fans and the players. You know, I really like this type of content in traditional sports, and I feel that it's not about, it's not something that is limited to traditional sports. Like, oh, it's a human thing, you know, mm-hmm. like no matter who you are, what you're interested in, you always are most interested in the people behind it. I think that's just human nature. And this is a series that can hopefully, you know, highlight that, can serve that need.
All right, well, we'll definitely be talking about that more, and I look forward to seeing what comes of it, guys. Coming up next, we're going to break down some of the must-see matches of the week coming up here on the Owl's Nest. Stay with us.
Hey, it's Weird Beard from Checkpoint XP reminding you to make it blue. Help say thank you to our heroes on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic. Whether you're streaming, drawing, singing, cooking, or anything else, showcase your talents and hashtag light it blue. You can find more information at our website, checkpointxp.com.
Welcome back to Checkpoint AFK. Your host, Norris Howard, here. Usually we talk about video games, but we're going to take a little quick sidebar right quick and talk about movies, which is something else that we also love here at Checkpoint. But, you know, AMC theaters. Now, if you are unfamiliar with AMC, they got theaters all across the world, all across North America.
And they were eyeing bankruptcy already.
They were already looking at bankruptcy. They're not looking that great. As no movie theaters are looking that great in a non-Marvel year, but they are having quite a public tiff with Universal Pictures over, of all movies, Trolls World Tour.
Well, now, specifically, it was their reaction to Trolls World Tour.
Yes, and just to give some context, Universal made the decision in the light of the coronavirus outbreak that they would simultaneously release Trolls World Tour both in theaters and at home for a video on demand. Now, they made goo gobs of money on that decision, and a lot of people, because kids were at home, they weren't at school, and they've been sitting at the crib, the video on demand did very well, obviously taking money out of the pockets of AMC theaters and other theaters across the world. AMC decided that based on that decision, they would no longer carry any Universal Pictures in their theaters.
Fast and Furious 9, Jurassic World.
Yeah, the like, Fast series. Universal Pictures still puts out some pretty big blockbuster films. So
that's where they live.
This is a big decision.
They're very much so in the like running the trailers during the Super Bowl big movies. They're not financing small indie movies. They're not doing any art house movies. Like, this is all.
Yeah, this is not Bad Robot. This is not Miramax. These are not your small budget films. These are not your Oscar bait done by these art house studios. These are big budget, big box office smash movies.
I'd like to read the comment, because it wasn't just the fact that they put Trolls out, the AMC's, well, screw you guys. It was a comment comment made by by Universal. I can't find the exact person, but from a Hollywood Reporter article here, someone from Universal said, the results for Trolls World Tour have exceeded our expectations and demonstrated the viability of PVOB. As soon as theaters reopen, we expect to release movies on both formats.
Right.
Which immediately is going to cut into AMC's profits, period.
Oh, yeah.
And as you said, the fact that AMC was already looking towards filing bankruptcy, right? They're screwed either way, whether they stop carrying Universal movies hold on. Let me finish. Classic Norris. Let me finish. So from AMC's side, if we continue trying to operate with Universal doing this, we're screwed, right? If we stop carrying their movies, we're screwed. So what do they actually have to lose by making the threat of, we're not going to carry your movies anymore?
Still hundreds of millions of dollars is what they stand to lose. Because if you're
they're closing anyways.
No, dude, if you're going to tell me that people are not going to want to go out and watch the next Fast and the Furious movies
some
in a
will.
Theater.
I, I definitely you're ridiculous, would, for sure.
Right? Because that's where people want to go see those movies.
But, you're telling me they're not going to lose money either way? Movies,
no, they're going to lose money, but you don't lose all of it. If you're going to tell me I got a choice between making, you know, I made $500 million last year. If you're going to tell me I got the choice between making $250 or making zero from this one studio, that's stupid. It's cutting off your nose to spite your face, dude. Yes, this studio can do whatever they want with how they release their films. You are a theater. You play the movies. You shut the fuck up and you play the movies. Now, it's not like... No, dude. This is such a stupid decision from Universal. It makes no sense.
So we need to start off on the correct foot here of saying, talking post COVID-19, do people still go to movie theaters? That's step one.
Some yes. will.
And yes. step two is
in a world where Marvel movies still exist. Yes.
But then that's the next point is step two. What do people still go to movie theaters for? Do they only come out for the huge blockbuster yep. like Marvel movies or
yep.
Does any movie except for a blockbuster bring people out because they can't get it other places?
And that's what's changing. Like in this post-COVID world, people aren't going to the theaters to see every little show anymore. And I wrote a piece about this for our website way back when this was all beginning. As soon as Disney announced that Onward was going straight to streaming, the genie's out of the bottle. This is the end of the way things have happened in theaters. The only reason people have accepted having to see things in theaters first is because that was the only option, and it was just beaten into our head that that's how it was.
Yeah, no one's going to see the next Seth Rogen, Judd Apatow movie. It's not happening.
Nope, they not just if I can watch it at home.
Oh, and but the writing for that already was on the wall, and it was even before Onward. When
you're right,
when Roma, an Oscar level quality film came out on Netflix instead of coming out to theaters first, people were like, "Oh my god, this will change everything," and it did. But the point is, people still went out to see those big budget films, and to say that we will knowingly cut off pretty much the last source of profitability that we have as a movie theater based off principle is stupid.
It's so not based off of principle, yeah, though. You nope. said yourself, or one of you yourself said that AMC was already debating bankruptcy. That means mm-hmm. that even at the rate things were going, they wouldn't survive.
Yeah, so burn this shit down.
So now if they're looking at even more profit going away, they can't just stick to, well, I guess we'll take what we take. They have to do something to stem the bleeding.
So right? Hold on. So tell me who goes to AMC theaters because they support them in their choice to stick it to Universal. How do they make more money? How do they make their situation better?
No one. And this work rate or this move right here isn't to try and endear the public. This is, and it's not going to work either way. What they're hoping is that Universal will stick to the wait 60 days after theatrical release
they're not
to
gonna
put
do
it on digital. No, but they're right. They're not. They're I, not. I, but I, AMC I, cannot just sit down and take it. They have to do something.
I agree with you.
This isn't it. This yeah. isn't what they should be doing, but they do have to do
something. Hold on. This is really important. Fading at the edges in our chat says, I know a couple that owns a small private theater and they're probably going to lose it. Yeah, yeah. because movie yeah. People are not going to movies, especially not small theaters, to see these small releases. And yes, that sucks. And I really, really want small theaters to continue to exist because they play really great films. But at the same time, if you own a movie theater, if you are a theater conglomerate, ooh, excuse me, that was great.
Charming.
If you are a movie theater owner, seeing the writing on the wall for digital distribution of films, no, it does not help you. And Robbie, I agree with you. They're damned if they do, damned if they don't. But at the same time, you have to, in a time where people are not making money, you got to be making as much money or looking to make as much money as you can before you start making some really tough decisions. It's silly to say, oh, we're not going to carry Universal films when Vin Diesel is still bankrolling Fast and Furious films. I'm sorry, that's stupid.
It's not going to work out, obviously, because this is the type of threat that you can make. And if Universal doesn't buckle, all right, you know what? Fine, we'll keep using them after all. Because Universal's not going to come back and go, nah, you know what? We don't want to put the movies in your theater. Because they're going to take their money where they can get it.
What I honestly feel like this is, though, is there's one big name that we haven't said and brought up in this conversation, which is what I think is driving all of this. The Mouse House, Disney.
Yes, the House of Mouse, baby.
I really think, because I don't think it's about Universal. I think it's about Disney, because Disney already does this shit where they go, yo, you're going to run, if you want to run Avengers, the biggest movie of the year, you got to run it for 5-6 months. You
X have to amount run of it weeks. Yeah.
And they own it. Pretty soon, Disney is just going to buy all movie theaters, and they are going to run only Disney movies, and they are going to make it so that, hey, you want to come out?
And guess what? With a decision like this, AMC makes that significantly more possible.
Listen, yeah, when AMC goes bankrupt and Disney can buy them for pennies on the dollar, you better believe that's exactly what's going to happen. Now, Robbie, you mentioned that the writing's been on the wall for this for a while, and I think you're right. What we're seeing, though, Norris, I think you said it, coronavirus isn't bringing about anything new. It's just accelerating the timeline. We've suddenly jumped 5 years in the future.
But the point that Weirbeer is bringing up is the most important point, is that Disney has enough money to go in and buy AMC and literally make them 200 seats worth of Disney movies. Yep. If they sat back and said, hey, we're running, here it is, AMC Theaters running a special. Go see Star Wars like it was 1977, original cut. See it in theaters. Like, they will have the power to be able to do that, and they'll have the money to be able to do that.
And they'll pack that house, by the way.
And they'll pack
it. It's also the only way.
And they'll pack it every single time. But AMC is shooting themselves in the foot, because they would lose all autonomy to be able to play whatever movies that it is that they want if that happens. And by doing this decision, by saying we're not going to play Universal movies because we're upset that we lost money on Trolls, shut up. Okay, because you're going to lose money.
It's not about trolls. Going forward.
Like, the movie theaters are so, when I say this, I have zero interest in big business. I want to, like, most rich people make me very upset. And so, but by saying that, movie theater chains have been bullied over the past 4 or 5 years, not only from Disney, not only from some of these distribution companies, but even from, like, MoviePass, right? Where essentially they gamed the system, hoping that these movie theaters would be able to sell a bajillion million dollars in concessions, didn't do it, and lost their ass on it. Like, I think that movie theaters and movie theater chains especially are starting to feel the pressure of, like, I don't know, drive-in theaters, you know, like, name me the last drive-in theater that you went to.
For Wyoming, which is the only one I still know of. And the last time I went, I think I was in high school.
Yeah, like, it's been
I think there's one on Dixie Highway up in Michigan.
And somewhere. So, like, once movie theater chains get into that same predicament where it's fighting over crumbs and scraps, like, it's just, yes, it's going to advance, but really we're starting to see the big eat the small, and what's going to be left over is,
unfortunately, in order for the medium, you know, traditional movie theaters to survive, it's going to go the way of traditional theater, and it's going to get to a point, Norris, like you said, where it's more of like you're going specifically for an experience. Is the new Avengers movie out? Okay, that'll be in there, but you're now probably paying $20 to $30 per ticket to go and see it.
You're already paying $20 to $30 a ticket.
No. Per ticket. I'm not talking about all the other stuff baked in with it.
No. I feel you. And listen, and to be perfectly honest with you, I think not only is that a distinct possibility, I think most people would be okay with it. Like, that's the sad part, is I think most
consumers
would say,
it sucks for the industry, absolutely, though, because it's a lot of people losing their jobs.
No, 100%. I agree.
Do you feel bad for movie theaters? Like, do you think that it's something? Because it's, I mean,
yes,
it's not.
Because
it's
unlike,
not...
because unlike theater, I think this was, I think theater was a lot more resistant to changing their subject matter, carrying a lot of stuff that was more modern and newer, that more, you know, contemporary audiences would care about, as opposed to movie theaters, which they just been showing movies that come out. Like, people just want to watch movies, but they just have been shut down because of the advances in technology. I think this is not anything movie theaters could have done about this.
I think it is
different in that sense.
Well, and I think when it comes to traditional theater as well, because unlike with movie theaters, where, like you said, there's a future here where, like, you know, Disney or the big conglomerates and corporations just come in and corporatize it and turn it into their own little showroom, you know, traditional theater was still able to keep a certain amount of their integrity. And they're like, you know, look, people will come and watch it if they can pay for it, but we still get to make what it is that we want to make and show what we want to show. Whereas the movie theaters now, if Disney buys them, all right, that's just it. Something else in Disney's pocket now. Yep. Yeah.
You know, it's a miniature Disneyland in every city. So, I mean, it would be horrible. I would hate to see that for as much good content as Disney makes. I don't want to see a conglomeration of Disney owned theaters that now show only Disney movies. Like, that's like some dystopian like 1984 shit. You know, I don't want that. So another part of me in this is just very upset that this decision is made, because I want Universal's movies to still be played at theaters that I can get to. And so I think the consumer ultimately is who is harmed the most out of this.
100%.
In terms of, you know, being able to experience film the way it was meant to be experienced, which is in a theater. So, you know, that's the biggest thing that I'm upset about. But yeah, the writing's on the wall. AMC, for as much as I hate their theaters, I will fight for their right to exist. But it is a frustrating thing to hear, especially considering the situation everybody is in right now, where every industry is hurting, especially anything that's brick and mortar.
Well, it's the same issue that traditional sports is going to have to deal with in the very near future here. They're not selling out stadiums anymore because the home viewing experience is a way better experience in most
cases. So
much
better.
And I mean, like, why am I bothering to drive somewhere, find parking, pay exorbitant prices for concessions, and deal with annoying people sitting next to me when I could sit at home with annoying people I'm related to and eat things for way cheaper?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think the whole situation is going to have to change. Everybody's going to have to rethink all of this. And the world will look very different in terms of live events. The world will be very, very different for movies and sports moving forward. But that's going to be our episode of Checkpoint AFK. For Robbie Landis, Callie Sloan, and Weird Beard, I'm Norris Howard. And we hope to see you guys back here one more time for another episode of Checkpoint AFK. We'll see you later.
Bye.
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 StageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.